Remember, we're engaged in a study of people who are just like us. You ever thought about how concise the Bible is in comparison to all God could have said throughout the ages of history? We do have 66 books, but think about what God chose not to reveal. That gives value then to every single word that proceeds from the mouth of God. And people in the scriptures that we may not know much about and might even not know how to say their name, God knew them and He included them. And it's all for the purpose that we'll understand what kind of people ought we to be that pleases God. What's He looking for in men and women who are His disciples? And so I want to encourage you this morning to consider with me a man by the name of Bartimaeus. His name is only found once in the scriptures. It's in Mark chapter 10, and I want to invite you to that opening, Mark chapter 10. We'll read the last paragraph. Bartimaeus and us. Now, anytime you're engaged in Bible reading or Bible study, I want to encourage you to ask three very simple questions. And they must be asked and answered in this particular order. Question number one is simply, what does it say? So this is just a reading of the text, and I would encourage you to do that in a way as if you've never read these verses before. Now, my great professor and mentor, who's gone on to his reward, Marty Pickup, taught us, I remember the day in class where he opened his Bible and he showed us, he said, I don't put any notes in the margin, I don't highlight or underline. And he said, it's not because I think the pages itself themselves are holy and that's somehow adding to or taking away from the word. He said, I just want to have a fresh read every time. He said, I found that when I opened the Bible and looked at my notes, that that's where my mind went first. And so when you just ask, what does it say, you're looking at it with fresh eyes. Maybe I've missed something before. Maybe there's some connection I've not made before. Question number one, what does it say? Question number two, what does it mean? Now that is giving respect to the original reader or the original audience of the message. What's the situation like when they received this information? What did the city of Corinth look like? Or what was it like being a disciple at this stage of history? What you're doing is you're putting these words in their original context, which will then lead to the third question, what does it mean to me? And you see, when we start with question number three, we're not going to give proper respect just to what does it say and what does it mean to them. What does it mean to me? Why has God preserved this? And what does He want me to know about my life? So we're going to consider those three questions while we look at Bartimaeus and us. So let's start with question number one. What does it say? Mark 10, verse 46, beginning. And they came to Jericho, and as He was going out from Jericho with His disciples and a great multitude, a blind beggar named Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the road. And when he heard that it was Jesus the Nazarene, he began to cry out and say, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. And many were sternly telling him to be quiet. But he kept crying out all the more, saying, Son of David, have mercy on me. And Jesus stopped and said, "Call him here." And they called the blind man, saying to him, "Take courage, arise, he is calling for you." And casting aside his cloak, he jumped up and came to Jesus. And answering him, Jesus said, "What do you want me to do for you?" And the blind man said to him, "Rabboni, I want my eyes to be opened." And Jesus said to him, "Go your way. Your faith has made you well." And immediately he regained his sight and began following him on the road. Okay, that's step number one. What does it say? Now, don't get excited, because steps two and three take a little longer than step one. What does it mean? Well, anytime we're reading in the Gospels, sometimes our first thought is, well, let's compare this to how Matthew and Luke give this information. Or let's try to harmonize the Gospel accounts. And what I want you to remember is that each Gospel was written to a specific audience. Each writer had his own intention in mind in revealing the story and the life of Jesus of Nazareth. And that becomes apparent when you consider that Mark's gospel, though this account is mentioned in Matthew 20 and Luke 18, Mark is the only one who mentions the beggar by name. Bartimaeus, which he then defines for us, simply means son of Timaeus. Well, why do you think Mark would include his name? Would it be because his readers would have known Bartimaeus? They knew him and perhaps wondered, how did this man become a disciple of Jesus? Whereas Matthew and Luke were writing to people that didn't know him. And so what was then the point of saying his name? It's kind of like when somebody's telling you this long, drawn-out story about something that happened 50 years ago, and they get caught up on the name of the man who was the attendant at the gas station where they stopped. They said, let's see, I can see it on his shirt. It was something like Harry or Jerry. And the whole time you're thinking, I'm never going to see this person. I don't know who. Just tell the story. Get on with it. Well, Mark's saying, you know Bartimaeus? Well, here's how he became a follower of Jesus Christ. So what does it mean? What were these words that were given to the original audience? Well, it says, it just starts with verse 46, they came to Jericho. Well, who are the they? Where did they come from? And how are we supposed to know who they are? Well, look back at verse 32. And they were on the road going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was walking on ahead of them, and they were amazed, and those who followed were fearful. And again he took the 12 aside and began to tell them what was going to happen to him. You see, sometimes when you're studying the Bible, all you have to do is just look elsewhere in the chapter or maybe elsewhere in the book to determine, what does this mean? The danger is to just take one verse or maybe a couple of verses and lift them out of their context and make them say what they don't mean or what they don't say. But just by examining the text, we have answers to our questions. And our text continues, verse 46, they were going from Jericho, and a great multitude was also following Jesus. They were going to Jerusalem to celebrate one of the feast days. And as they were often called, they were on a pilgrimage going up Mount Zion to worship at the temple. And along the way, they encountered a blind beggar. I suppose there have always been beggars. And as is the case in our day, they were then on the side of the road. That's where the people are. It's where the people are always going to be traveling. And perhaps Bartimaeus thought that there would be some generous people who were on their way to worship. Maybe they'll be in the right frame of mind, or maybe they're trying to do some good deeds before they go to worship to incur the favor of God. And so this will be a good opportunity to beg for money. And he heard this commotion, this large crowd that was coming, and I'm sure it sounded different than just the normal flow of traffic. In verse 47, he heard that it was Jesus the Nazarene. He heard. See, that's the only way he could have known. He couldn't see. And so he asked, what's all this noise? And they said, it's Jesus. Jesus the Nazarene. And so he began to cry out and say, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Well, why would that be significant? He heard it was Jesus the Nazarene, but he didn't cry out, Jesus of Nazareth. He called Jesus Son of David. That's a messianic title. That's what the scriptures prophesied about Jesus. And this Messiah, remember, would be the one who would come to heal the sick, to cause the blind to see, to preach the gospel. So he cried out, Jesus, Son of David, have compassion, have mercy, heal me. And look at verse 48. And they were sternly telling him to be quiet. Can you believe that? Jesus doesn't have time for a blind beggar. He's the Son of God. He's got important things to do. What could you offer him? Well, if that sounds familiar to you, look back at chapter 10 and verse 13. And they were bringing children to him so that he might touch them, and the disciples rebuked them. And when Jesus saw this, he was indignant. This is the righteous indignation, the anger of Jesus, and said, permit the children to come to me. Do not hinder them, for the kingdom of God belongs to such as these. Several years ago at Southside, it was determined we were going to have our very first vacation Bible school. Now, we've done a summer lectureship for nearly 50 years, but this would have been our first VBS in the summer. And while I certainly thought it was something that was good for our kids, my attitude, I'm ashamed to say, was I don't want to be involved in it. See, I've got important things to do. I'm preaching the gospel. I don't have time for all these little kids. And I read this verse, and I could hear Jesus' indignation to me. If you can't be like a little child, you can't enter the kingdom of God. Don't refuse the children. Permit them to come to me. Well, that's what his disciples were trying to do with Bartimaeus. Jesus doesn't have time for you. He's important. But did you notice it said he kept crying out all the more? Verse 48. So the Greek tense of the verb is they kept telling him to be quiet. He kept getting louder. They told him to be quiet. He cried out all the more. Can you imagine if Bartimaeus had quit? If he had become discouraged and become quiet. Verse 49 says, Jesus stopped. Jesus heard him. Just like he saw Zacchaeus, who had climbed up into the tree. He wanted to see who Jesus was, and Jesus took notice of him. Jesus heard and said, call him here. And they said to the blind man, take courage. He is calling for you. You've been calling out for Jesus, and now he's calling for you. And it says that he jumped up and threw aside his cloak. Now, can you imagine if people had been pitching coins into that cloak, alms to give to this beggar? And it's like the coins went everywhere. He threw the blanket aside and ran up to Jesus. And notice what he said to him, or what Jesus asked him in verse 51. What do you want me to do for you? Now, if that sounds familiar, look up to verse 36 of Mark chapter 10. After James and John said, teacher, we want you to do whatever we ask of you. And he said to them, what do you want me to do for you? Now, on this occasion, the sons of thunder wanted positions of authority. Let us be on your right or your left. Let us be right there next to you in the new kingdom so that people will know who we are and we will have this prominence and importance in your kingdom. Now this blind beggar is given the question by Jesus. What do you want me to do for you? He didn't ask for food. He didn't ask for money. He said, Lord, Rabboni, I want to regain my sight. That tells us that he was not born blind. Regain or restore, your version might say, means that one time he could see, either injury or accident or maybe disease, he had lost his sight. But he called Jesus Rabboni. Same word Mary Magdalene used in the garden when she saw the resurrected Jesus in John 20. Rabboni, I want to regain my sight. And verse 52, Jesus said to him, go your way. Your faith has made you well. Made you whole. You see, he came to Jesus for his physical condition, and Jesus pronounced him spiritually clean. And as a result, immediately he regained his sight. I was sitting at a table in Panera Bread in Pasadena several weeks ago, and a man came in who was crippled. He had an arm that was withered and needed help. And his wife had gone up to order And he was having trouble sitting down. He's right next to me, so I just helped him get his place, and we started talking. It turned out he was a member of a church that does healings. And as we talked, I just had to ask him, "Well, sir, why haven't they healed you? Why haven't you asked that your arm be restored? We know that was done in the Bible." And he said, "Well, there are some miracles that take time. They're not instantaneous. They're a process." I want you to notice it says immediately he regained his sight and began following him on the road. He didn't go his way. He went Jesus' way and said, "I'm going to give myself and devote my life to serving and following the one who's made me whole." And notice he did so crying out and glorifying God. That's what it means. Now let's go to the third question. What's all this mean to me? What's the point of Bartimaeus and us? Well, for this I have three questions quickly. Number one, how badly do you want to see Jesus? Is it your heart's desire that no matter how people try to discourage you, no matter what's happening in your life, you want to see Jesus? Because remember, Bartimaeus was discouraged from crying out. They tried to get him to be quiet. So what if people say to you, "Why are you even bothering praying? What's God going to do for you? How's God going to solve this problem? Or you're so far gone, why are you wanting to even go back?" How badly do you want to see Jesus? What about when the devil discourages you and says, "You can't be redeemed. You can't be forgiven of that"? I want you to remember Bartimaeus, that the more he was told to be quiet, the louder he got, because he wanted to see Jesus. How badly do you want to see Jesus? Question number two, do you know that Jesus is calling for you? Those were the words that comforted Bartimaeus. Take courage. He's calling for you. He wants you. He hears you. Isn't that the point of Jesus' great invitation in Matthew chapter 11, verses 28 through 30? "Come to me, all who already got everything figured out." Is that what it says? "Come to me, all who are already perfect. Come to me, all who have already, who don't need any help anymore. Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Jesus is calling for you. That means that he sees you. And he hears you. And Jesus wants you. Just like he did a blind beggar. Do you know Jesus is calling for you? And number three, what do you want Jesus to do for you? What would you say? Well, Lord, could you cure world hunger? You know, he could have done that while he was here. But that wasn't the purpose for which he came. Lord, would you clothe all the homeless? What do you want Jesus to do for you? Lord, I want my eyes to be open. I heard about his healing, of his cleansing power revealing, how he made the lame to walk again and caused the blind to see. And then I cried, "Dear Jesus, come and heal my broken spirit." You want Jesus to do that for you? What does it mean to me? And how will you leave this meeting with Jesus? Still in Mark 10, look at verse 22. After he met the rich young ruler and told him what he needed to do, at these words, his face fell and he went away grieved, for he was one who owned much property. That's one ending to the story. To go away sorrowful, grieving. Or will you go on your way rejoicing because of what Jesus has done for you? One of our young mothers at Southside was telling me she was hearing her little boy singing his heart out in the house one day. And he was saying, "Who will follow Jesus? Who will make them cry?" Well, you can cry and rejoice and be glad because of the healing by Jesus, and then attach yourself as his disciple to follow him wherever he goes, singing the whole while, "I once was lost, but now I'm found, was blind, but now I see." How badly do you want that this morning? It's what it means to me. What will I do? You can come and confess your faith that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of David, the Messiah, who came to seek and to save the lost. Repenting of your sins, you can follow the pattern of the New Testament verses of salvation. He who believes and is baptized shall be saved. You're suffering from a broken spirit this morning. You can come for the prayers and encouragement of your fellow disciples. If you have any need in the gospel, make it known right now while we stand up and while we sing.